This is the Experience Points Podcast, episode number 161 for the week of February 29th, 2012.
Welcome back to the Experience Points Podcast. My name is George Albor.
I'm Scott Juster.
And we are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a site dedicated to the serious but not humorless analysis of games, etc., etc. And
so we're going to talk about some of that, etc. today.
We are. And late last year, Scott and I did a podcast about board games. And we talked about a variety of board games. I play a lot of them, so I always find them very interesting. And we had said that at the end of that episode, when the Gears of War board game comes out, we'll play that game because it's a beautiful meld between video games and board games and share with you our thoughts. Now, come Christmas time, I received the board game as a gift, but Scott and I haven't been able to get around the dining room table and play it until quite recently. So today we're going to be talking about the Gears of War board game. And we'll talk about it using two approaches. First, we'll just talk about the game as a game and talk about some of the rules, the experience of playing it, all of that. And then we'll talk about the board game as it relates to the video game and sort of the types of experiences the board game recreates or cannot recreate in this more sort of tactile and slower form than, of course, Epic's Venture. So there's quite a lot to talk about because it's actually a pretty big and complex game.
Yeah, both physically and time investment-wise.
Right, absolutely. And it takes quite some time both to set up, to explain the rules, and actually play. In terms of general large games like this, it's actually not all that complicated to learn, I feel. I didn't think it was particularly difficult to get people to understand how to play the game and get people involved in the process. That being said, there are some minor rules that make it a little bit complicated. There's some clarifications that would have been nice for some of the specific rules. But in general, this is a relatively, I guess, medium-sized, complex designer game.
Yeah, I mean, like, just right off the bat, if you're one of those people that don't really play... I guess, is that what you call them, George? Designer board games?
That's what I say. Some people say Euro games. This one's American design.
Yeah. But I mean, this is something that is like, you know, more than Chutes and Ladders, more than even Monopoly, like something that is much more reminiscent to a strategy style game.
Right.
Yeah. But I mean, for those people that might not play a lot of those, I don't play very many, but, you know, and as an outsider, it was pretty easy to grasp. I mean, it looks, there's a lot of little tokens, but they all have very simple uses, and so it's not something like learning how to do a million different things in the Game of Thrones game or something like that.
Yeah, there's not a huge amount of pieces. There are quite a bit, but it's not Game of Thrones. It's not Monopoly.
Yeah.
To give a little bit of basic explanation of the rules, it's actually a cooperative game in the similar vein of games like Pandemic, Mists Over Avalon, Game of Thrones to some lesser extent, but it's more of a shooter game, and there are others like this. I believe there's I forget the name of it. It's got some complex German name, but there's another shooting game that's actually somewhat similar to the Gears of War board game. And the basic idea is that your goal is usually to survive and then either defeat a boss or get to a certain location.
Right. And in the Gears of War game, much like the video game, you know, It is, like you were saying, cooperative, and you're shooting your way, and the ultimate end of the game is getting into this one control room, basically, and taking care of all the locusts in that control room.
And we should say there are actually different missions. Scott and I played one particular mission. I believe it was called Scattered. And this actually, we played with four players, so we maxed the amount of players that this game could take, and then two of us were each doing our own room until we grouped up together. There are other missions that are sort of moments from the original games revamped. So there's a one where you go into the hive and fight the hive queen. There's one where you fight the large brutish fellow who like breaks through walls.
Yep.
And you have to kill him with the
Hammer of Dawn.
Yeah, the Hammer of Dawn.
Yeah.
There's also a horde mode, actually. So if you're tired of all of the regular missions, you could just go up against your enemies in waves.
Mm-hmm.
The board is laid out in kind of tile format, I guess, but it's actually random. So you choose which tiles you'll be putting together based upon the mission, and then you randomize those tiles and get what you get. So there's quite a bit of replayability in terms of room layout. I guess that's basically it. I think one of the bigger features I should mention, and maybe this is a good segue into your thoughts on the game itself, but unlike other games where you keep track of your health over time, the amount of cards that you have in your hand, which is what allows you to play certain maneuvers, is also your health.
Yeah.
So most characters, other than Marcus, start with 6 cards in their hands. And every time you play a card, you are depleting your own health maximum to some extent.
Yeah.
You can draw cards on your turn, but only up to your max hand size. So you can't become some uber person by just holding cards.
Yeah.
So you basically have to constantly make a decision between weakening yourself and getting things done.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, those cards have actions on them, like everything from shooting and chainsawing to
active reload,
picking ambush. Up a item or any, you know, basically anything you do will cost you some sort of card. And if enemies attack you, that damage that they deal to you also costs you cards. So you can find yourself in a pretty tense situation really quickly if you're not thinking about it.
So I've had this game for a while, and I should say to everyone listening, I might have a little bit of confirmation bias. I really like board games, so maybe I'm a bit biased towards this experience. But I want to know, Scott, from you, what were your first thoughts when you first started playing it? Because you don't play a lot of board games. Did you find it accessible at all?
I mean, I think it's pretty accessible in terms of the rules doing only one thing. Like all the tokens and all of the cards basically only have one thing you can do with them,
mm-hmm.
except each different character, like the Coltrane, has a different ability. Like he can basically turn any card into a certain type of counterattack card.
Right.
So even if it's like a support card, he can turn it into a counterattack. So every character has their own special wild card.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that's really the only difference. So you don't really have to keep track of multiple rules for specific pieces or keys, which I think makes it easier for people. Because really, we had 3 people that had never played it before and 1 person that had played it before. And so in that situation, it didn't really take all that much more time, I think, for us to glom onto it.
Yeah.
Which and I like that, actually.
And for the most part, the enemies, which vary according to the game, there's tickers, there's Nambit tickers, there's drones and boomers and grinders. In any given match, you're only likely to face 3 at any one time.
Mm-hmm.
And all of them have basically the same rules other than, like you said, some of them have specific changes to those character abilities.
Yeah.
But they're all laid out in front of you. You can look at them whenever you want. So like a lot of, in my opinion, good board games, there's not a lot of hidden rules, right? Everything is there right in front of you and relatively easy to look up, even if there is a complication.
Well, and all that being said, even though things are pretty straightforward, I mean, I still think it suffers from some of the problems that a lot of board games suffer from, which is mm-hmm. poor technical writing.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Like, the descriptions, the rules themselves are fairly straightforward. The descriptions of those rules can be a little vague, and that's just a linguistic problem. Like, I think it's super hard to describe the rules of a game, and especially if your main trade is a game designer, not a technical writer or a game writer, then it's really hard to distance yourself from this game that you've been making and then write about it in a way that someone who's never experienced it before can understand.
Right, exactly. And like you said, this is not new to Gears at all. There's, I would say, the vast majority of designer board games have very complex rules, and reading the booklet isn't going to help you as much as having someone who's just familiar with it explain it to you.
Yeah, that's a larger problem that I've kind of been thinking about a lot recently, and I've actually heard people talk about, like, today, in modern times, the best way to learn a board game, if you don't have a bunch of other people around you who are going to teach you, is to look up the game on YouTube, and people have these, like, visual audio walkthroughs of the game, and they say it's far easier than reading through the manuals.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And for a game like this, where, you know, like you said, it has relatively simple rules, but there's a lot of dynamism to it.
Mm-hmm.
You could get yourselves in situations that don't have a incredibly clear outcome.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of forced to sort of justify why things are happening. And the rules, even though maybe the designers thought that they put in an explanation for those circumstances, it's not entirely clear.
Yeah, yeah. But going back to the actual dynamics, I mean, right off the bat, I was struck by how bad things got, like, early on.
Yeah.
Eric and I, so we were playing, me and George and our friend Steve and my brother Eric. Eric and I were playing in one section of the room that was closed off from George and Steve, who were in another section. It's kind of like in the game where you take those branching paths and then meet up later on. So we were in one branching path, and then almost immediately we, you know, we draw the card that determines what the locusts do, and all of a sudden, like, three or four dudes just spawn. And, like, right away, like, we don't really have time to, like, set up or really kind of get used to it. And they instantly start attacking, and which means that we have to, you know, to counterattack or dodge or do whatever, which means we're also taking action. So, like you were saying, the damage and the taking action, pretty soon my cards are, like, depleted after only one or two turns, and we're already on the run.
Right. I should say most cooperative games tend to be pretty difficult.
Yeah.
And, of course, the reason is, in order to encourage, you know, long-term replayability, it has to be difficult in order for players to feel as though they're accomplishing something. Yeah. This game does have some variable difficulty. There's actually a an insane difficulty if you want to play, which, of course, I've never played. I don't know if I'll ever be able to be that good. But you're right. Like, it's designed specifically so that things get messed up pretty quickly.
Yeah. And there was certain decisions that we made. There's a tactic where one of your weapons, you can use a grenade, and just like in the game, the grenade can try to close up an emergence hole so that no more enemies can spawn. And both Eric and I tried to do that a couple times, and just by luck of the dice rolls, failed. And so that those emergence holes that we failed to close up early on in the game kept on hounding us for like a good 10 turns later after that.
Yeah, and we were also playing with an event card that spawned more emergence holes.
Yeah. Yeah. And so not only did we not, you know, there's a certain number of emergence holes on the board that are just, you know, painted onto the board. You can't move them at all. But then, like George was saying, there's cards that you have to put another token, another emergence hole on the board somewhere. So not being able to close up those static holes was just made our section of that early part of the game incredibly challenging.
So I'm glad you brought up the dice issue. What do you think of the game's randomness?
I'm a pretty big fan of randomness in general in games. And this is venturing more towards, you know, talking about the game as a video game as well. But in a game that is defined, its narrative, like its plot, basically its story is about people with skills, like the skill to shoot straight or the skill to chainsaw a dude in half. Dice rolls start feeling a little bit inadequate at that point for me. Right. Because, you know, those emergence holes are pretty big, and those grenades are pretty easy to throw. And so,
well, I mean, there's a 1 in 6 chance per attack dice to potentially close one up.
Yeah, and 1 in 6 is not great odds something that you're trying to throw a tennis ball sized grenade into like a huge swimming pool sized pit, you know, and so I was kind of irritated that at certain points I like randomness in general, but there are certain actions that I felt were too random. Like, I felt like the grenades were pretty random. I also felt like the chainsaw battles were pretty random in a not such a great way. Because, I mean, you know, you're right up in someone's grill with a chainsaw. Like, what are you going to do, miss? Like,
yeah, I mean, I guess this starts getting into how it relates to the actual game. But even in the game, they can fight back, right? You could have a chainsaw duel.
Yeah, but I felt like the characters that we were playing against, those specific, what do they call them? Not, I mean, they always call them grubs, but
tickers.
The basic, the
drones.
Guys.
Yeah, the drones. Can
the basic drone foot soldiers. Most of those guys don't have chainsaws.
Right.
And so, and even the little figurines don't have chainsaws. And you know, they're not the most mobile of creatures. I mean, no one's very mobile in the Gears universe, but I mean, so I felt like it was weird that, you know, on the dice, there are certain skull and crossbones dots rather than just normal dice dots. And, you know, you had to get one of those to chainsaw someone. And so I felt like, you know, I think the chainsaw could have been easily dealt with by saying if you get two or more dots or one skull and crossbone dot, you know, you just chainsaw them to death. Like, I feel like you didn't really have to roll a special in order to chainsaw them because it's such a blunt instrument, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's basically the rules. If you get a skull, they automatically die.
But I would also like to see if you get two or more dots and or a skull. Like, I just want the chainsaw to be much easier because it's a melee attack, and melee attacks don't, in general, don't really miss all that much. It's not like you're trying to snipe or anything. And so there are certain points. I was basically, once I figured that out, I was much more likely to range attack people than melee attack people.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, and I think that's a really good point. I think, especially for cooperative games, randomness usually has to play a big role, because you're not, this isn't a strategic battle between you and some other person who can react, you know, accordingly. If you were, say, playing against a person who was playing as a drone, well, maybe they could play cards to, you know, fight back and try to dodge your chainsaw attack, in which case it would make more sense that using a chainsaw is as difficult as it is.
Yeah.
But because you're not fighting anybody, that randomness is one of the only ways to make sure that it's not basically an overpowered maneuver.
And there's no real drawback to having more one-hit kill attacks when the Locust card deck so many times spawns more Locusts.
Right.
I mean, it is an unending supply of Locusts.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even if you one-hit kill some, it's not like you can just one-hit kill everybody on the board and then walk your way to the end of the game.
Yeah.
Like, you'll eventually get more enemies regardless. So it's, I think if I were to change something in another revision, I would go for something like that.
Mm-hmm. Was there anything else that stood out to you in particular?
Other than, you know, the other huge thing, I think, is the cover system.
Oh, yes.
Which I didn't, it's difficult to describe, but here it goes. So there are certain sections on the board that are, you know, chest-high walls, just like in the video game. And it's represented by a white dot and a couple triangles. And if your character moves to one of those spaces, it's considered in cover, which means you get a couple extra defense points if someone attacks you. And it's all determined by line of sight in the physical world. So if you are in a piece of cover, behind a piece of cover, and there is a Locust off to the upper left of you, you kind of have to get a ruler out or maybe like a little piece of string and see exactly like where the Locust line of sight is, so if he can even shoot at you at all, like, or if there's a wall in the way or something like that.
Right The game actually comes with a little measurement tool. I just lost it, so
well, I mean, you know, we used the very high-tech tool of a stick to do it, I believe.
Right.
So like it's something that's like, but I like that kind of stuff because I didn't expect it to have any. I like it when certain board games play to their strengths of having a physical presence.
Right, absolutely. And I completely agree with you. I think the cover mechanic worked pretty well, by and large. There's a very big incentive to be in cover at all times, be it because certain rules on the enemy cards, because you get more shield dice. There's some cards that let you draw cards if you're a person who's in cover. So there's plenty of reasons to be in cover at all times. And I feel like, by and large, most of the map allows you to be in cover at all times, although you have to be strategic about where you want to be, because some cover is only soft cover. Sometimes your friends are in that cover space. You have enemies in that cover space.
Yeah. And you know, there are cards that will allow you to move more than one space at a time. And, you know, you can use a roadie run card to like jump three spaces and then get to a space with cover, which is, you know, very reminiscent of what you would kind of do in that situation. Like you wouldn't just saunter your way through an open hallway with nothing to shield you. You would run, you know?
One of the things, and I mentioned it already, but that I really enjoy from the game is the cards in your hand being your own health.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's just a really elegant way to deal with health without cluttering the rules or the game tableau in front of you. And it sort of forces you to make decisions even when it's not your turn, right? If you're taking damage, you're going to have to make the decision between getting rid of a card that might be helpful later on or a card that is helpful sooner rather than later. And all of these things will come back to you if, when you really need to sit tight, you just don't have it.
I was kind of going back and forth on this because, I don't know. I understand the argument for elegance, basically. Like, you know, there's not another meter you have to take care of when you're thinking about health and damage and so forth. But it also seemed sort of weird when I would play a card that was basically like dig in, which is like a taking cover, draw another support card. You know, it's not an offensive card. It's a defensive thing.
Right.
And yet that effectively costs me some health, which seemed kind of, I don't know, it seemed kind of out of sync with what was actually happening in the rules.
Right.
And so I was trying to, I was thinking about whether or not I would have just preferred another separate little, you know, game piece, you know, a little slider that shows your hit points basically.
Right. But then, I mean, one, I think that would dramatically change the play experience because then, I mean, deciding what to do is not, has nothing to do with your health. I think that you and Eric were talking about the narrative of the cards themselves, right? Mm-hmm. If Diggin was worded slightly differently, it might make a bit more logical sense to explain why what's happening is happening. I think that's completely accurate. I don't know what that would be in the case of Diggin, but there are other examples where it seems like the logic of what's written on the card, narratively speaking, like what your character would be doing, doesn't make sense with the rules of the game themselves. Yeah.
And the one thing I should, we should point out, the specific one, I think we came to this conclusion while we were playing, it's the card that sometimes when you kill enemies, they drop guns, mm-hmm. and every once in a while you'll draw a locust card that basically clears all of the dropped guns from the playfield.
Right.
And there's really no justification for it, and it's a good example of where...
Narrative justification.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. I mean, the gameplay justification is that the board would get really cluttered, and you could stock up on guns and just kind of mow your way through the entire experience.
And you need a way to cycle back a limited supply of ammunition tokens.
And yeah, I mean, it is just like a video game that only has a certain amount of system resources, and then enemies start fading away. You know, there needs to be a way to clean up all the stuff that's around. And so that makes total sense. But it's also a good example of where a good narrative designer can smooth out the rough edges, like the kind of practical but unsightly things that have to be part of a game for it to work can really be softened by some good writing. And so it's like if you get that... It's pretty arbitrary that all the guns have to be cleared from the board every once in a while, but you could easily write a card that says, you know, a locust support battalion swept through that area and reclaimed all of the fallen guns and corpses of their brethren for processing or something like
right,
that.
Right, right.
And it's like, that's also part of the universe, and it also serves the mechanical need, you know?
Yeah, it's so funny. We're talking about narrative in terms of games, but I think this is spot on. And especially when you have a world that's already rich enough, narratively speaking, it's mm-hmm. not that difficult, especially in the case that you're talking about.
Yeah.
The card in question is called Distraction, mm-hmm. and it forces you to discard an ammunition token that you have on one of your weapons and to clear the board. Now, getting rid of the ammunition token makes sense to me, right? You're being distracted because maybe there's an enemy on a balcony and they're mm-hmm. drawing your fire, so you've wasted an ammo token, sure. But like you said, getting rid of those weapon tokens on the board doesn't make any sense, and it's not that difficult to think of something from the Gears universe to make logical sense in the board game universe.
It's so rare that we get a chance to describe why these humanistic touches matter.
Right.
And, you know, I always feel like as a person who is kind of two minds, you know, I really like systems-based things, but, I was trained much more as a writer. And so right. I understand the utility of writing, but it's very hard to describe the utility of writing. And every once in a while, a really good example comes across like this.
Right.
And so it's like this is why it's really important to, you know, either make a game completely devoid of story or pay very close attention to the story when you're doing it, because it'll help the mechanics out too.
Yeah, absolutely. You had another good example that was more about art choices, really, and it was a card called Scavenge, where you go forward and pick up a piece of ammunition, but the picture was of Marcus shooting someone.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're first, I mean, just mechanically speaking, when you're first just looking at a card, you want it to be able to make sense, right? You want it to be readable just right off the bat, and that confuses readers, but it's also sort of a weird backwards decision in this case.
Yeah, I mean, you could say that he's scavenging from someone that he shoots and is taking their gun, but in that case, then the card should allow you to attack as well.
Right.
And so it's like you either have to do it, you either have to go full in with the mechanical reason, or you have to smooth out that rough edge with a little bit of creative storytelling, you know?
Right. And I should say, I think aesthetically speaking, the game is gorgeous, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
The little characters are incredibly detailed for board game pieces.
I was almost thinking that some people might paint them.
Yeah, I've seen some paint jobs of them, and they're remarkable. Of course, you know, there are miniature painters who do amazing job with painting miniatures of all types. So, of course, a game that comes out with super detailed miniatures would make for really good paint jobs. But even if you don't paint them, it just, I think it looks really gorgeous, by and large. The tiles themselves look very pretty, albeit a little bit dark.
Well, I mean, this is a good segue into the actual game versus board game versus video game discussion itself, because that was one of the first things that struck me. We actually made a joke about this, like, because there's certain, to tell where you are on the board, they divide up each tile and each space within the tile with, you know, shadowy black lines that basically separate the rooms, and they're pretty hard to see. And I was like, well, you know, it's just like the game. Like, it's all the browns and grays of the rainbow. Like, it's right. Like that is how Gears is. Like, Gears is a drab world. And the board game itself is kind of drab, too, where if you're not paying attention, you will miss out on where the room starts and ends and find yourself in a bad situation because you actually went into the wrong part of the room.
You know? You have to look a little bit closer if you really want to pay attention.
Yeah. And I also think that the... you know, there's a definite reason why the COG soldiers, you know, Marcus and company are bright red and the Locusts are all gray. I mean, because they have very similar physical profiles.
Right.
You know, they got that Epic Games, you know, they're basically walking bulldozer type, you know, body types. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard to tell whose token is whose, except that there is a really bright color differentiating them.
Right, and even differentiating between the individual COG figurines is sometimes a little difficult.
Yeah, definitely, because they all, you know, they're all beefcakes.
But again, yeah, that's not their fault, right? That's Epic's fault to some extent.
Yeah, they're very true to what it was. And I remember thinking that, you know, playing Gears of War every once in a while, like, oops, sorry, I was shooting you and I thought that was a monster, but, you know, it's fine. Like...
In terms of the actual experience of playing the board game versus playing the video game, I think it works remarkably well, actually. I was really surprised to have it feel and create some of the same experiences and emotions that I was used to from the video game. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, it's a board game. This cannot be a perfect recreation of the video game. It just can't. You know, a lot of the systems you have to figure out yourself. They're not going to be, it's not going to be as easy in the game. You can't always do an action. You can't do a lot of things that you can do in the game. But by and large, the actual experience of, you know, needing to take cover, as we said, which is heavily incentivized in the game, makes it feel just as important in the board game as it is in the real game. Mm-hmm. And the same can be said for teamwork. You know, you need to be near your friends, one, to pick them up if they fall, two, to just be another body to distract enemy fire. Because you could draw a Locust Guard and have four drones attack one person and just slaughter them in one turn.
Yeah.
Right? So you cannot leave each other alone. The chainsaw, in my opinion, works okay for the most part. And it's a really cool feeling when you decide to rush in, throw a grenade, and then just chainsaw some dude, right? Like, that's a great feeling, and it feels good in both the board game and the video game because you do feel like someone who's done a huge, you know, event. Mm-hmm. And even though the game is partially based on your dice rolls, I do feel like you can make a lot of good strategic choices about where to place yourself, when to attack, and how to attack. That really changes the experience.
Well, it's that mid-range cover fighting dynamic that is in the game as well. You know, that's right. The cogs aren't very fast, so most of the movement in the board game is like move one space then attack, or attack and move two spaces, or something like that. Like, it's very rare that you're able to both attack and book it across multiple spaces.
Right,
like you either have to make the choice to roadie run and not be able to do any damage, or do some damage but move very deliberately through the map.
Right.
And it's like, which is pretty much how Gears works. I mean, like, it's you in Gears, the video game, you can't shoot while you're running.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And so it's like, yeah, that's very faithful to what the original vision was like.
And similarly, you can't just stop mid-roadie run, pick up a weapon, and then not expect to be fired upon, right?
Like,
you've got to make these decisions. And I think the game really shines when we were playing with all four players. You could actually play the game all by yourself.
Right.
Which I did, and was probably one of the most pathetic experiences of my life. But when you're playing with four players, the amount of teamwork and the deadliness of the enemies, I think, is enhanced to make a pretty thrilling experience. You know, I know at one point we were pretty close to dying, and you turned on the trailer music for Gears, and it was amazing. And the fact that we survived that sequence at all was inspirational.
there was this point where, like, I don't know. I mean, this is getting into the you know, I don't know how interesting people find this, but it's like it's us talking about board games. But, you know, indulge us for a minute. Like, I think, you know, Eric was bleeding out. You and Steve were like kind of in upstairs.
There were like four grinders.
Oh, yeah. Right next to us. Steve was just there, you know, facing four grinders. You were kind of behind him. I was running back to Eric. We all had probably like three or two cards, which means we were like half health or worse, basically.
Right. We had problems.
Yeah, there was, and then so I was like, I pretty much thought that the game was gonna be over at that point. So I just opened up my laptop and fired up the Devotchka song, like is this how it ends or whatever.
Right.
But then the most miraculous thing is that it all worked out and we actually won the game.
Yeah, I was genuinely surprised.
Yeah. To this day, I mean, when I woke up the next morning, I was like, wait, did we cheat or something? Like, how did we do that? Like, we were so close to dying.
I mean, I threw two really well-placed grenades, I think, is the secret to our success.
And there was that time where Steve was being surrounded by, like, three grinders, and they missed him, like, two times in a row.
Yeah.
And so it's like, some of it is just, you know, random dice rolls and luck. Other times, where I feel like we actually got our teamwork together, like, before we opened a door, we would group ourselves so that we all could charge into the door at the same time, or like one person would open the door and the next person would roadie run through it automatically. Like, definitely there was some tactical skill behind it as well.
Oh yeah, for sure. And you know, that experience specifically I want to talk about, because I think to some extent that was more intense than any experience I've even had in Gears to some extent. And that's partially because dying in this game is way more important.
Yeah.
Because I can't just leave you behind and then go kill all the bad guys, clear the room, and then let you get up. Right. Yeah. The board game does not work in that way that the game does. Mm-hmm. So it, you know, when Eric was on the ground, you had to go back.
Yeah.
It was in the win condition. You couldn't just leave him there.
Yeah.
So
he couldn't just respawn on me after he bled out.
Right. It forced you into a situation that you're not normally forced into. And like you said in the beginning of this podcast, it takes time to learn the rules. It takes time to set up. So if we had lost the game at that point, you know, that's it. We're not going to load a previous save point.
That's right.
Right? Like, we've invested 4 hours and we failed.
Yeah.
Right? Let's go home. And now, of course, you could say, okay, well, let's just redo these roles and you know, cheat a little bit so that you can finish the actual play experience.
But we would all know it'd be a lie, you know.
Like, exactly.
Yeah.
So I think that experience and the fact that the enemies are, you know, they have an edge on you. They're generally more likely to roll more dice than you are. Mm-hmm. They have infinite range on their weapons. Some of them can heal. Like, the game is harder in some respects than the video game is.
Yeah.
And so when we were in that situation and then overcame that situation, it was really exhilarating in a way that even the game sometimes has difficulty creating.
I mean, because in the game, you know, if you're a good shot and your thumbs are quick enough, then you can take out some enemies. You don't have to worry about luck messing you up, basically.
Right.
And I was trying to think about this in terms of, is there anything going, you know, let's try to do it in the reverse way. Like, should the video games take anything from this board game as inspiration? Hmm. And I was thinking about the luck aspect and how, you know, you can pretty, I feel like when we play Gears, we can manage ourselves pretty well. Like, not a lot of unexpected events happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started thinking that, like, it's really hard to do dynamic stuff in a video game, especially one that's more scripted like Gears is. But then I started thinking that that's what an open world game like Far Cry 2 does.
Right.
You know, you can have a plan that's set up pretty well, but there is some sort of dynamic systems always running in the background that are essentially as random as luck because you don't really know what they're doing.
Right.
And so, like, if you had this huge, you know, Gears of War universe where you're fighting some locusts, everything's going fine, but then all of a sudden a berserker spawns or something like that, or the map radically changes. Like, after a round in the Gears of War board game, you add another tile to the map, and all of a sudden it's far different because now there's new emergence holes, there's more items and stuff. So it's like that sort of randomness can still, I don't know, maybe be bolted onto the more skill-based shooting in the video game.
Yeah. One of the things that we caught on to was the fact that the locusts spawn pretty regularly was far more similar to the Call of Duty experience than it was to the Gears experience.
Yeah.
Because you always have to be moving forward at all times. Yeah. Especially in the mission that we were playing, because our goal was specifically for you to progress so that Steve and I could progress, mm-hmm. and then for Steve and I to progress so that you could progress.
Yeah.
And so there's, you know, you cannot clear the room. There's never a moment where you could get that moment of respite. And mm-hmm. similar to Call of Duty, that creates a really exciting experience when you just have to go, even when you don't want to, right? Yeah. I don't know if that would fit so well in the Gears universe, mm-hmm. but to some extent, playing the Gears board game makes me respect Call of Duty more, because I get what they're trying to do with that experience. It might not be logical, but it's effective.
Yeah, I mean, it is a tool to foment desperation and to make sure that something, that action is happening no matter what. Because, you know, even in the Gears board game, we spent a lot of time kind of hunkered down behind cover. Right. And the only thing pushing us on was that we didn't know when an emergence hole would come up. And even if we did close it up, that means another one could emerge later on. I mean, in the video game, once you finish all those scripted events, you know another one isn't going to come. You hear the guitar riff, and that means all the enemies are gone.
Right, know? Right. I mean, I think that, of course, there are some things that the board game can do that the video game just can't do. You know, I think some of the cooperative elements work really well in the board game. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact I can discard cards to travel with you if you're moving through my space, things like that. Like, you could do that in the video game if you just want to, you know, hold the run button. But there's a different feeling when you're helping someone decide how to make a decision that's going to affect the whole team.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. you don't really get that a lot in video games, because they can't do social as well as four people around a table.
Yeah, true. Very true. And, you know, in that way, it's very similar to the in-story experience of Marcus and the rest of the cogs.
Right, exactly.
Brothers to the end.
So, last thoughts, what do you think about this board game? Good?
I think it was pretty sweet.
I think this is a really... the weird thing is, normally I did not have very high expectations for this board game.
Yeah, right? It's very clearly, or it could very clearly be a cash-in.
Right, but it's not. Like, this is a very solid and well-designed game, and even if you're not into Gears of War at all, I think that it makes for an interesting board game pickup, especially if you're into cooperative games, which I very much am.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, the more people you have around, like, if you have that four-player experience, it's kind of... when did this come out? Before Gears of War 3 or after?
It came out afterwards.
Okay, well, I mean, it's interesting that both of those games did the four-player, you know, story thing. At the same time, basically. I mean, they basically came out in parallel, you know, but it took them a while to do, but it makes me even more enthusiastic about experiencing a four-player Gears campaign, basically.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Real quick before we go, are there any video games that you think would make a good board game translation?
Oh, man. Well,
I mean, Halo's four-player, right? I could see this working in the Haloverse.
Halo's so different, though, because you're always kind of strafing and there's not as much cover. Like, it's not a very measured game, you know?
Yeah, well, you could take a cover, put in a different mechanic.
It would be hard, I guess. It might be kind of a constant game. Like, you'd have to cycle around the board a lot, because you shouldn't be standing still in Halo a lot.
Right.
You know, so it'd be a very different thing. Like, I'm trying to think of other games that are measured enough. Like, in a way, this game reminded me more of what a Vanquish video game would or board game would be like, because in Vanquish is another cover-based shooter, but your health is also a consumable resource. Like, you can boost and you can go into bullet time, but if you take too much damage, you automatically go into bullet time. Mm-hmm. But if you've already used up all your bullet time, then you don't have that extra buffer. You'll just die.
Right.
And so in that way, the card-based system is very similar, because, like, if you've used up all your cards doing a bunch of actions and you get attacked, you don't have any shield left, basically.
Right, right.
And so what'd you say?
That's a good one. I like the Vanquish idea.
Yeah, which, you know, I'm just trying to crowbar Vanquish in there, so I think more people should play it. But, Gears is a unique case, I think.
I think something like Dead Space could work as well, though. I mean, and it doesn't have to have the same mechanics per se, but, you know, Dead Space isn't the only, you know, horror experience. There's actually cooperative horror board games. So I think that it would be, the fact that this Gears board game works so well gives me faith that people should try translating video games into board games, because you might get some really cool experience that works within the universe regardless.
Yeah, I mean, there's always a surprising amount of strategy behind the tactics. Like, you think of Gears of War as an active game where, I mean, hell, has active reload, like, right in the dynamics. But, I mean, there's a lot of higher-level strategy. And if you think about it, more like a battle simulator, like a tank, you know, panzer type setup. Like, these are basically tank-like dudes walking around that need to be, like, directed, you know? Like, they're not just... You know, they're not going to flip around the entire board. They have to do measured movements and measured attacks. So it's like it lends itself well. It's kind of like I was thinking about it. If like the Warhammer or the Mech Warrior universe or something like that, yeah. Like something that is action focused on the micro level, but still very tactical and strategic when you zoom out. Like it's similar to that.
All right. Right. Cool.
So is that it? We're gonna book it out of here before an emergence hole pops up?
Yeah, we should already run out of here.
I'm still having nightmares of that, jeez.
That was a good moment. That was a good moment.
Gosh, I don't know. Okay, so if you folks want to write in with your experiences or suggestions, anything to do with the podcast, experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
Also, if you have any board game suggestions or want us to talk about a specific game experience, feel free to let us know. You can leave your thoughts in the comment section to this podcast. The site is experiencepoints.net, so come on by and bring your friends.
All right. Until next time, take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Have a nice day. Every time we